It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Debt forgiven. Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. President Biden will announce today a $300 billion student loan wipeout plan. It erases $10,000 in college debt for borrowers who make less than $125,000 a year. There are critics, however, on both sides of the political aisle.
I worry that we say to colleges, charge whatever you want, we're going to forgive the loan.
Canceling student debt would also be grossly unfair to the Americans who worked hard for years to pay off their loans.
Expect that announcement around 2:15 this afternoon. Kellyanne Conway of Fox News thinks the president's trying to buy votes in a crucial election year.
It's not fair to the welders, the carpenters, the hairdressers. It also is a complete farce. We are making things more expensive because they continue to spend money that we don't have on things that we don't need.
The average cost for 1 year of private college in this country's gone from $3,000 in 1970 to more than $50,000 last year. That's 4.5 times the rate of inflation every year for the past 50 years. A night of surprises. That's the other big story we're following today.
Tonight is a good night.
The voters made themselves clear tonight.
Primary results are in from both New York and Florida, and there were plenty of surprises in both states.
I honestly can't believe it. I cannot believe it.
We'll begin with correspondent Marianne Rafferty and a big race in the Big Apple.
Congressman Jerry Nadler won a decisive victory over fellow Democrat and Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney after redistricting pitted the three-term Democrats and powerful committee members against each other.
Closer to home, New York GOP Chairman Nick Langworthy scored an upset win over Buffalo real estate developer Carl Paladino. This was a race to fill an open congressional seat in the Southern Tier.
Tonight, the Southern Tier made me the comeback kid.
Langworthy will move on to face Democrat Max Della Pia, who lost a special election last night to Republican Joe Sempolinski. Sempolinski, who will finish the term of former Congressman Tom Reed, spoke to Family Life News earlier today.
What do you chalk your victory up to?
Being somebody who is from the district, that knows this district, people apparently felt confident to put this very solemn responsibility in my hands.
Sempolinski will serve until the new Congress is sworn in January. The abortion debate was a major factor in another special election, this one in the Hudson Valley, where Democrat Pat Ryan eked out a narrow win over former New York gubernatorial candidate Mark Molinaro.
We are a country who wants democracy for all. And tonight, we sent that message loud and clear across the nation.
Fox News political consultant Joe Borelli.
It was clear that the issues of inflation, the issues of crime in New York State motivated Republicans, but not in the same way that the issue of abortion actually motivated a lot of Democrats.
And in the redrawn 17th congressional district, Democrat Sean Patrick Maloney defeated progressive challenger and state senator Alessandro Biaggi.
Alessandro Biaggi was one of the architects of our bail reform law. She is, by all accounts, a socialist.
We'll have more primary results later in the broadcast. Now on to Florida.
We can make history, and we will shock the world.
Democrats nominating candidates last night to take on GOP Senator Marco Rubio and Republican Governor Ron DeSantis.
Governor DeSantis only cares about the White House. He doesn't care about your house.
Former Florida Governor Charlie Crist will challenge the current one in November. He cruised to victory last night, as did Florida Democratic Congresswoman Val Demings, who hopes to upset Marco Rubio in the midterms. The New York Post reports today that President Biden knew more about the FBI raid on Donald Trump's home than he initially let on. Trump's legal team weighing in.
This was an improper search. It was not done correctly. There was no need for it, and he was cooperating.
The Post reports that Biden signed off on a request from the DOJ back in May to turn over 700 pages of classified material to the FBI. Political pundit Sean Duffy.
The White House was saying, hey, listen, we knew nothing about the raid. All of us knew that that didn't pass the smell test. Of course they were going to know that if the FBI and the DOJ are going to raid a former president's home, this is highly political. It's never happened before.
Team Trump claims the raid constitutes a violation of the former president's Fourth Amendment rights. Three migrant children have drowned while trying to cross the Rio Grande into this country near El Paso, Texas. The 3- and 5-year-olds and a 2-month-old baby were part of a group of illegal immigrants who were towed under the water by the river's dangerous undercurrents. 5 more buses of illegal immigrants arrived today in New York City from Texas. And today marks 30 years since Hurricane Andrew.
I've never been to a war zone, but it looked like a war zone out here.
First responder Pete Gomez remembers Andrew like it was yesterday. So does the mayor of Miami, Daniela Levine Cava.
Hurricane Andrew killed 65 people. It destroyed 63,000 homes. It left 175,000 people homeless.
At the time, it was the worst natural disaster in U.S. history.
Everything you know about hurricane forecasting, communication, emergency management, evacuation, planning, mitigation, and response was defined, if not set into motion, by Andrew.
Jamie Rome with the National Hurricane Center. A legendary NFL quarterback has died.
The all-time leader in touchdown passes for the AFL is Kansas City's Len Dawson.
Dawson led the Chiefs to a Super Bowl victory in 1970 and was their quarterback for 14 years. He spent the next 33 years in the broadcast booth and is in the Hall of Fame as both a player and an announcer. Len Dawson was 87. Still to come on the Noon Report, a midweek edition, opening day at the fair, race results in New York, and tall ships in Erie.
Well, a very good afternoon to all. Things are fairly tranquil across most of the area this afternoon as we get a break from the incessant showers and thunderstorms of late. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10.
All right, Kevin Williams, we will see you then. In the meantime, let's check what's happening across New York and Pennsylvania. The Great New York State Fair kicked off today in Syracuse. That's where we find Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Yeah, it's opening day. It's also Governor's Day because sitting governors usually visit on opening day. Now, the fair is going back to the 13-day run this year with a full lineup of vendors, shows, attractions, and exhibits. Oh, and of course, the food. Gates open at 9 o'clock every morning. Fireworks close each day at 9 p.m., and there's plenty to do in between. Ride-goers and games on the Midway, agricultural exhibits and free concerts, and of course, the Sea Lion Splash has returned to the fairgrounds. Now, there's a new Instagram feature that shows you how you would look if you were a butter sculpture. The Butterizer filter superimposes your face onto a butter bust, and you don't even have to be at the fair to share that on social media.
Nobody knows fair food quite like Jeremy Miller. What are some of the new treats at the fair this year?
Well, I don't know necessarily about new, but the ones that I have my eyes on that I'm definitely going to need the Tums for is right there in the dairy building where you see the butter sculpture. They have these ice cream sandwiches that are donuts with a big gulp of ice cream right in between them. I'm pretty sure I can feel my calories just going up by the second there.
Yeah. Donut / ice cream sandwich.
Oh, unbelievable. And just about everything is fried. You can get fried,
yeah, of course,
butter, fried bacon. There's so many different things that you can feast on at the fair.
Go early and go hungry. That's what we like to say.
Exactly. That's the way to do it.
How about that? Family Life's Jeremy Miller at the Great New York State Fair in Syracuse. Primary results are in from last night, and the big headline from New York, that surprise win for Nick Langworthy, the state GOP chair, defeating Buffalo real estate developer Carl Paladino in the Republican primary for an open congressional seat in the Southern Tier. We talked about it today with political pundit Jason McGuire.
One of the big upsets, of course, was the Paladino-Langworthy race. All the polls showed that one going Paladino's way. What do you think happened there in explaining Langworthy's victory?
Well, I think, you know, in many of these races, particularly in an August primary with so little turnout, it really came down to who can turn out the vote. And the organization of the campaign that, you know, Nick Langworthy and the Republican Party had was clearly superior. When you look at that particular race, you see that Mr. Paladino won Erie County pretty handily. But it was those outer counties that really delivered the victory for Mr. Langworthy. Look at Steuben County, for example. I mean, it was really influential in this race.
One other race we want to get you on, that was in the Hudson Valley, that special election. There were two of them yesterday, one in the Southern Tier, but the other was in the Hudson Valley, and that was the Mark Molinaro-Pat Ryan race. Pat Ryan focused on abortion, whereas Molinaro focused on inflation. And is that a concern for Republicans going into November?
I think it's a concern for Republicans, but I'm not reading too much into the tea leaves of this particular race. Again, it was a low turnout race, and this is one in which Mr. Molinaro has taken a position to where he's personally pro-life, and we haven't maybe seen as strong a statement on the life issue from him as some other candidates.
That is Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. It was 1 year ago today that New York got its first female governor. August 24th, 2021, Kathy Hochul was sworn in as New York's 57th governor. This coming November, she hopes to become New York's first elected female governor when she goes up against Republican Lee Zeldin. A new poll out today has her up 24 points on Zeldin. Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson thinks polls on the status of that state's two major elections this fall severely undercount the GOP contenders.
Both are Republican senator candidate Mehmet Oz and Republican governor Doug Mastriano are probably doing better than what the polls actually show.
Polls show the race is tightening with Democratic candidates Josh Shapiro and John Fetterman. Thompson thinks Oz and Mastriano could ride the coattails of Pennsylvania's GOP congressional delegation into victory lane on November 8th.
I may be a little biased. I actually think the coattails to ride are the coattails of our Republican congressional candidates. We have eight incumbents running for re-election, and these folks are polling well.
The most recent Trafalgar poll has both Oz and Mastriano within 5 points of their Democratic challengers. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf may be 5 months away from retirement, but he's still got one big item on his to-do list. The two-term Democrat wants to give $2,000 to every Pennsylvania household making less than $80,000 a year. Republicans argue it is ideas like that why inflation is at a 40-year high. Pennsylvania places of worship are preparing for mass shooters. Faith leaders gathered in Harrisburg Tuesday for a training that most wish that was unnecessary.
Unfortunately, even a church isn't a safe haven anymore.
Threat assessment specialist Dr. Aaron Kotkin spent hours Tuesday preaching preparedness to leaders of churches, synagogues, and temples.
Security is always important for any type of congregation where you're going to have a lot of people. We can't trust everybody, unfortunately, even in a church setting.
Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry helped organize the symposium.
And we can show people things they can do to help take some control over their lives. Not only does that make them feel better, but it also makes them safer.
Tips for congregants include knowing where the exits are and being aware of your surroundings. The dry, hot summer impacting the apple harvest.
The size of the apples may be a little bit less than a year where there's abundant rain.
Melinda Viscara runs an apple orchard in western New York.
You might also see sun scald on a few of the apples. Not, it doesn't affect a large percentage of it, but you would see it. It's kind of like a, looks like a sunburn.
And because it's been so hot and dry, the apple harvest is arriving sooner than usual this year. If you're a fan of tall ships, then Erie, Pennsylvania is the place to be. The bayfront will be filled with tens of thousands of sightseers starting tomorrow.
The Erie Tall Ships Festival begins with a Thursday afternoon parade past Presque Isle. Seven sailing ships are on the way. The brig Niagara is featured as Erie is its home port. Others are from Bay City, Michigan, Baltimore, and New York City. Two come from Ontario. One is from Spain. Also floating in is a fan favorite, the world's largest rubber duck. The mama duck is 11 stories high and takes 4 hours to inflate. She and her baby duck will be moored at the east end of the Bayfront Festival grounds. Greg Gillespie, Family Life News.
All right, sounds like a great time coming up in Erie this week, and also a lot of fun is sports. Our midweek edition next.
Good afternoon, I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, the Yankees have swept their two-game Subway Series with the Mets with another 4-2 victory. Aaron Judge went 2-for-4 and drove in a pair. And oh yeah, he hit another home run, number 48 on the season, to lead the Bronx Bombers. The Yanks remain 8 games up on Toronto, who beat Boston 9-3. The Mets, meanwhile, saw their lead shrink to 2 games over the Atlanta Braves. The Bravos got a stellar outing from Max Fried, 8 innings, only 3 hits. And they beat the Pirates 6-1. In Philadelphia, the Phillies scored in the bottom of the ninth and edged the Reds 7-6. Matt Vierling went deep in the win. Elsewhere in the National League, the Cubs and Cards split a pair, Chicago winning 2-0 in Game 1, the Cardinals coming back and walloping them 13-3 in Game 2. And the Dodgers beat up the Brewers 10-1. The rest of the American League saw the Orioles down the White Sox 5-3. Tampa Bay manhandled the Angels 11-1. And Houston doubled up Minnesota 4-2. Interleague play had the Giants 3-1 winners over Detroit. Arizona topped Kansas City 7-3. The Rockies edged Texas 7-6. Cleveland won 3-1 over San Diego. The Marlins beat the A's 5-3. And Seattle downed Washington 4-2. In the NBA, it's good news for the Brooklyn Nets and their fans. Kevin Durant met with ownership and leadership, and they have decided to move on together. Durant no longer wants to be traded. Football news, Amazon and DirecTV have signed a deal with the NFL that will begin airing Thursday Night Football in restaurants, hotels, and casinos. That is a look at sports.
Thank you, Randy Mann. Still to come on the Noon Report, college debt wipeout plan. Kev says drier days ahead and the sound a black hole makes. We'll play it for you after this.
If happiness really is about having infinite choice, as we're so often told, then why are so many of us so miserable? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Regular listeners to our weekly Breakpoint This Week podcast will know that my co-host Maria and I are big fans of the reality competition show Alone. 10 wilderness experts are dropped in the middle of nowhere, usually a place cold and full of bears, to fend for themselves. Whoever stays the longest wins. Well, in the latest season, a military veteran with strong survival skills and extensive experience overseas seemed poised to win, but called it quits after just a few weeks. In an interview afterwards, he explained, quote, "When I was in the military and separated from my family, I didn't have a choice. Out here, I had the opportunity to get on the radio or the phone and say, hey, I'm going back to where I'm comfortable. In other words, it seems, having the choice to go home made staying that much harder for him. Well, according to conventional wisdom, at least the kind accepted in our cultural moment, the exact opposite should have been true. The more control we have, the more choices we can make. These are the things supposed to make life easier and more satisfying. And this misconception is a feature of life since modernism." Writing back in 1976, American sociologist Peter Berger identified how that view of the world, especially for Westerners, shifted. Because of the dramatic progress brought about by science and technology, humans began to believe that the world would eventually be fully understood. And if understood, it could then be fully mastered as well. What previously was experienced as fate now becomes an arena of choices, wrote Berger. In principle, there's the assumption that all human problems can be converted into technical problems. So the world becomes ever more makeable. And a mark of our late postmodern era is our obsession with having choices. The higher the stakes, the more acute is the illusion of freedom. Former Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy described this impulse in his now overturned Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision when he wrote that, quote, "At the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, of the mystery of human life." See, in his view, the freedom of choice extends to even choosing what's real. So is it any wonder that people now believe that our choice should extend beyond sexual behavior to even sexual identity and physical reality itself? However, if happiness truly does come from the control made possible through infinite choices and our ability to make the world, why did this military officer competing on Alone find the opposite to be true? Why do so many studies show us that we are less happy than ever despite having more choices? The postmodern assertion that we can make the world exploits a weakness that's inherent to our fallen humanness and is especially acute today. We struggle to delay gratification. We might fool ourselves into thinking that we can, in fact, define our existence or choose our gender. We may think our decision about whether to stay married or whether to bring an unborn child to birth is based on deep moral reflections. However, at the end of the day, because we can, we tend to choose comfort now at the expense of flourishing later.
If we have the option, we call the producers and tap out. Justice Kennedy was wrong. No matter how many choices we have, we cannot remake the world. Everywhere we turn, we butt up against the limits of creation. And according to a Christian worldview, that's good news. God created the world with limits, physical and moral laws, bodies, certain geographic locations, times in history. He gave us specific parents and siblings and children whose specific needs constantly impose limits on our choices. Even if in modernity and postmodernity, such limits are anathema to be resisted and fought against with all the science and technology we can muster, true freedom is found when we recognize and rest in God's good limits, both physical and moral. After all, if God is good, then the limits he imposes are not burdens. They're blessings. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
It is 20 past the hour. Kevin Williams next.
Good afternoon. Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Other than an isolated shower in central New York, we're dry and mainly sunny. Comfortably warm with high temperatures near just over 80, dropping tonight towards 60 under starry skies. Partly to mostly sunny, warm, and more humid tomorrow, but watch for a thunderstorm in the afternoon across parts of western and central New York. High temperatures in the 80s. Variably cloudy Friday with some showers and rumbles, and high temperatures from the mid-70s to the middle-80s on Friday.
All right, Kevin, thank you kindly. At the Weather Center, this is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price. It is great to have you with us today. A lot going on this Wednesday, the 24th of August already. President Biden expected to announce at 2:15 this afternoon a plan that will cancel up to $10,000 in federal student loan debt. This is for borrowers who make less than $125,000 a year. Radio commentator Clay Travis.
I don't think that constitutionally Joe Biden has the authority to erase $300 billion in student loan debt without legislative authority supplementing that decision. And so I suspect this will end up in the Supreme Court.
40 million Americans owe more than $1.7 trillion with a T dollars in student loan debt. Critics contend canceling it will make inflation worse and drive up the cost of college. The results are in from last night's primary and special elections in New York. Family Life's Brandon Dixon has a rundown on the races.
Okay, Bob, here we go. State GOP Chairman Nick Langworthy defeated Buffalo real estate developer Carl Paladino in the race to replace Tom Reed in Congress. That's for the open 23rd congressional district. Langworthy moves on to face Democrat Max Della Pia, who lost a special election last night to Republican Joe Cipollinski. Cipollinski will serve the final 4 months of Reed's term. Also, there was a special election in the Hudson Valley that had more to do with abortion than inflation. Democrat Pat Ryan made the race a referendum on the recent Supreme Court ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade. He narrowly defeated Republican Mark Molinaro in the 19th congressional district. In western New York, Democratic State Senator Sean Ryan and Republican State Senator Ed Rath won their respective primaries. In central New York, Republican Brandon Williams pulled off the upset in his bid to represent the newly drawn 22nd congressional district. And in the brand new 24th district, Republican Congresswoman Claudia Tenney cruised to victory and will face Democrat Stephen Holden in November. Got all that? Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thankfully, I was writing it down. Thank you, Brandon. Today marks the six-month anniversary of the war in Ukraine. The State Department urging Americans to get out of there. There is intelligence that suggests Russia may be about to unleash an unprecedented bombardment on civilian targets. Up to 14,500 Ukrainians have been killed in the fighting. The U.S. estimates 80,000 Russian lives have been lost since the invasion began in late February. Today is also Independence Day in Ukraine, marking 31 years of independence from the old Soviet Union. Texas Congressman Tony Gonzalez says half of all the illegal immigrants coming into this country across the southern border are not from Latin America. A lot of them, he says, are from the Middle East.
In El Paso, there is a huge influx of illegal aliens from Turkey. And you're going, why Turkey of all places?
Last month, 10 of the migrants picked up at the southern border showed up on the FBI's terror watch list. And yesterday, the bodies of three children, ages 3, 5, and 2 months, were pulled from the Rio Grande. They drowned trying to cross into this country. The Korean automakers Hyundai and Kia are telling owners of larger SUVs to park them outside, away from any buildings that might catch fire. There have been at least 25 cases of the wiring on the trailer hitch catching fire. Again, this is for Hyundai and Kia vehicles. An electrical short is the culprit. A quarter million of these SUVs made between 2020 and 2022 are currently under recall. Well, if you're frustrated by the growing polarization of America, then you will want to stick around for the next several minutes as we take a closer look at the lost art of discernment. Family Life's Martha Menikas Foster is talking about it with author Hannah Anderson on this week's edition of Inside Out.
I think the best way, Hannah, for us to start would be for you to give us a definition of discernment.
I really wanted to see how it was presented within the scripture. And what I came away with was a definition of discernment as knowing the difference between good and bad so that you can pursue the good. Mm-hmm. So there is clearly this weighing and evaluating that the scripture talks about, that you would be able to know the difference between good and bad. But underneath that was also the kind of assumption that you would be directing your life and your thought and your energy toward what is good or those things that reflect the nature and character of God.
So now, Hannah, you call discernment a lost art, and I'm wondering if you see a connection between the exercise of discernment and the political allegiances and the barriers that have developed inside the American church and outside the church as Christians relate to the culture.
We're in this moment where the public square is happening on our phone. It's happening in our kitchen table as we sit in front of our laptop. Mm-hmm. We are being drawn into these larger debates and this information that's coming at us 24/7. And so when I say that discernment is a lost art, I don't mean that we are uniquely gullible or we are uniquely foolish. I think we exist in a unique moment. We are being flooded with information, and the conversations are often so polarized, so tribal, that we almost need more discernment maybe than previous generations, because we're encountering problems in a way that just are overwhelming to our human mind. Mm-hmm. We're flooded with conflicting opinions. And I think to handle that, sometimes we will take shortcuts because it is too much. It's just coming at us. It's very hard to sort through it. And some of those shortcuts can just be something as simple as the polarization or tribal affinity. If my guy said it, then it's true. Mm-hmm. And if your guy said it, then it's false. And that really is just a way for human beings to cope with this very chaotic world. But it is a shortcut, and it won't necessarily lead us to goodness. Because sometimes our guy is wrong. And sometimes the things that we're hearing from our team, whatever team we've associated with, needs to be challenged, needs to be corrected. And that's why developing discernment in the way that the scripture speaks about it, as testing things for whatever is true, pure, lovely, of good report, whatever is excellent, that list of virtues that ultimately reflect the nature of God, those kinds of tests are harder in many ways, but they actually lead us to goodness. Even though the shortcut is very tempting, a lot of the polarization that we're experiencing is because we're missing this longer, harder process of discernment.
Could you offer us questions we can ask ourselves when we're taking in information, both from the people who we feel speak for our tribe, as well as those sources that we don't know very much about?
You know, the first practice or the first question that we can ask ourselves is actually just stopping ourselves, giving ourselves pause and waiting before responding. The nature, especially of online discussion, is that it rewards immediate gut responses.
Yes.
It wants that fast like, that quick comment, that hot take. And so we live in a moment of accelerated response. Mm-hmm. And one way we can pursue discernment is to simply resist that, to simply stop long enough to say, I'm going to give space for the Holy Spirit to begin to guide me through this process. So I think one of the most basic things that everyone can do is just realize you don't have to react. You don't have to give the comment. You don't have to give a response. And then in that space, you really begin to evaluate first, not the other person, but your posture. Uh-huh. One of the things about these virtues that Paul talks about in Philippians 4 is that they test us as much as they test the thing that we're evaluating. Mm-hmm. And so there's this amazing kind of discipleship happening where if I'm going to trust something to be true, I also have to test whether I'm being truthful with my handling of it.
Very good.
if I'm really seeking truth, right? I'm not just mm-hmm. seeking to be right, but if I'm really seeking truth, that truth is going to test what I hear, but it's also going to test me. If discernment is cultivating the mind of Christ, then our minds are the first to be transformed and renewed before we actually engage in whatever issue or question is out there.
That is Hannah Anderson. She's author of All That's Good, Recovering the Lost Art of Discernment. This is the Noon Report on Family Life.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We're getting a little break today from the showers and storms that have dotted the region in recent days, and this is the result of higher pressure building into the region for the mass of relatively dry, stable air. A cold front will come in later in the week, increasing the chances for showers and rumbles again. But in the meantime, for this afternoon, other than an isolated shower in central New York, we're dry and mainly sunny, comfortably warm with high temperatures near just over 80, dropping tonight towards 60 under starry skies. Partly to mostly sunny, warm, and more humid tomorrow, but watch for a thunderstorm in the afternoon across parts of western and central New York. High temperatures in the 80s. Variably cloudy Friday with some showers and rumbles, and high temperatures from the mid-70s to the middle 80s on Friday.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Finally at noon, have you ever wondered what a black hole sounds like? Well, wonder no longer. There it is, folks. NASA tweeting out an eerie 34-second audio clip of a black hole in a galaxy cluster 240 million light years from Earth. Scientists turned data from the depths of deep space into a sound that humans can hear. The sound of a black hole. How about that? That's the world we live in. Wednesday, the 24th of August. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.